This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Matthew Pegas, and we're going to be talking about our trip to San Diego and some of our observations.
Yep, good to be here, Robert. We recently had yet another good trip, and I think we have some interesting topics to cover.
And the last time I've gone, I haven't been there in a long time. It was like when I was in high school.
Yeah, you were saying, which is funny to think, because it's not so far from where you live, but if you don't have a reason to go down there, why would you? And I guess it had been over 10 years. Yeah, I visited for my first time last January, and it was good to go back.
As far as the drive down goes, it's definitely not as scenic as the drive northwards. So basically, the drive from LA to Santa Barbara, where I live, and then further north up the coast, up the 101, it's definitely not such a scenic drive.
Yeah, I always harp on this that the 101 to me is way prettier than the 405 slash the 5. I just think with the 405 and the 5, well, different highways, but with the 405 on the way to San Diego, it's near the coast, so you'd think it would be good, but you don't really see the coast except for at a few points, and mostly it's kind of semi-industrial or just kind of the back. I feel like you're seeing the backside of a lot of towns.
Or mostly just a lot of it's mostly, well, it's less rugged overall. Like, there's not the dramatic mountains that you see going up further north, and it's more built up with like suburban sprawl.
Yeah, exactly. What you see is the sprawl of Orange County, which nothing against Orange County, but it's not the prettiest thing in the world. I mean, so yeah, getting to San Diego isn't as striking as taking the 101 up to San Francisco or something. But at the end of the day, you're still getting to a pretty good place.
I've heard a lot of people describe San Diego as a kind of a, like a smaller, cleaner version of LA, because with San Francisco, it's a dramatically different experience. But a lot of people will say that in many regards, like, there are a lot of similarities between San Diego and LA.
Yeah, I would say that up to a point for sure. It's the Southern California sort of vibe. But I feel, and especially on a superficial glance, I think San Diego's like that. One key similarity is the kind of sprawl of it and the sort of multiple cities and towns within San Diego County are kind of referred to as San Diego, much like in LA, where it's actually multiple cities and towns within LA County are referred to as LA. So there's that kind of spatial similarity. It's culturally similar, and definitely at a first glance, that's the impression that one gets. I would say though, as when you start to look closer and spend more time in San Diego, the differences come out a bit more. It's a totally different pace there. There's no film industry there, really. A lot of the key things about LA that make it LA are actually totally absent there. So I mean, it's a bit more, I would say LA is known for being somewhat easygoing. I don't know if that's so much the case anymore. But certainly San Diego is more easygoing than LA, more even more beach oriented. I mean, in LA you have the beaches, but in San Diego there's a bit more of a total, it revolves a bit more totally around that sort of thing. So I would say the more time I spend there, the more it's like it's really not that much like LA. It's in some way it has a little bit more in common with Santa Barbara in terms of the pace.
I guess in some ways you could almost describe it as a hybrid of LA and Santa Barbara.
In some ways, yeah, that's you were saying that on the trip, and I would agree. A hybrid of LA and Santa Barbara with touches of San Francisco in there, and I even think there's some street corners where you feel like you could be in Vegas, and that doesn't have so much to do with culture, because obviously Vegas is extremely distinct, but maybe architecture, there's some things that are a bit reminiscent of Vegas. So it's kind of a fusion. There's little elements of a lot of places in the general area of California, Nevada, that it kind of calls to mind. It's also, I like to think of it as sort of like the Miami of the West Coast. So it has that too.
I guess in a sense, because their downtown is right on the waterfront, while downtown LA is much further inland. So I guess it's like Miami in the sense that you have a downtown area and high rises along the waterfront. That's not, yeah, you don't really get that feel in the coastal parts of LA.
Yeah, you not quite. It's a, yeah, that's what I mean by it revolves around it more. The coastal parts of LA kind of feel still more cut off from LA proper. They're kind of their own little beach areas, or Santa Monica is literally its own city. Whereas in San Diego, it really is right on the water in that way, and there's a kind of cohesive beachiness to it. And yeah, in terms of the Miami comparison, it definitely holds up in terms of it, of the downtown being right on the water, and also simply that Miami's, you know, the furthest point southeast, pretty much, and San Diego's pretty much the furthest point southwest, so I think there's an analogy there.
Have you been to Miami?
You know, I actually haven't. I've been close. I would love to go. It looks fascinating. I just watched Harmony Korine's The Beach Bum, so also Spring Breakers is a movie I really enjoy, also by Harmony Korine, so I've always been kind of attracted to go into that area. It's pretty gritty, if we're to believe Harmony Korine's representation, it seems kind of like a fascinating place culturally, but I have not been. I've been to the Everglades, but it didn't cross Florida. San Diego's a lot chiller than that. It's a lot bougier in a way. I can't really speak because I haven't actually been to Miami, but I think there's a kind of gaudiness to the culture there. A kind of grittiness, a kind of sleaziness even, which I don't think that really applies to San Diego. San Diego is a pretty nice place. I mean, I'm not sure I don't know if I'd love to live there. It's maybe a little too chill for me, but it's a pretty nice place. You don't have so much of like the Venice Beach or Miami thing of people driving around in like muscle cars and stuff. It's a little more mellow than that.
Yeah, everything is really clean, and it's probably one of the safest major American cities, and what's interesting is there's not I think it's like the only major city in California that doesn't have like a significant ghetto element. Like there's areas, yeah. I don't even know what you would consider like to be the worst areas. You do have like National City is kind of, it's not really, I mean it's kind of lower middle class maybe. Some places are kind of borderline ghetto, and then there's an area called Barrio Logan, which we drove through.
Yeah, we did drive through Barrio Logan, and there was, some homeless people? But, I mean, compared to L.A.
Yeah, there's nothing like, compared to nothing. South Central.
It's like, even if that area really was very bad, which I can't even really verify that it was completely tiny compared to the entire, you know, sections of L.A. that are essentially homeless encampments or ghettos. Then yeah, in terms of National City, I stayed there in an Airbnb once. Not bad at all. I mean, like a pretty average part of the valley, like Reseda or something, which isn't that bad, just somewhat lower middle class. Yeah, so really pretty much through and through a nice area.
And with the whole region of like Orange County and as well as besides San Diego, like there's a vast area that's basically all like middle to upper class, because you don't really get that in LA. In LA, there's smaller pockets of upper class areas along the coast and kind of aligning like towards the hills and then down towards Wilshire Boulevard. And then there's a vast area that's pretty lower class, but it's remarkable that whole stretch from basically the whole like Orange County to San Diego, it's a vast area that's mostly middle to upper class.
Yeah, it really is remarkable. I mean, that's got to be. I'm pretty confident about this. One of the biggest, largest sprawls of upper middle class, of upper middle classness, in the country. Maybe that and like the, Virginia Beach area outside of D.C. might be comparable to that. Seemingly endless upper middle class suburbs. And they used to be, Republican strongholds, but no more.
Yeah, both Orange County and San Diego, they've traditionally voted Republican. I think San Diego County went for Bush, and then went for Obama, and then voted for Clinton over Donald Trump.
Yeah, that was actually news to me. I knew that Orange County was a Republican stronghold, but I didn't know that about San Diego County. You told me on this trip, and I looked up the history, and indeed, in 2004, they voted for Bush, but they went for Obama in 2008, and the gap has been kind of widening ever since. And they went pretty strongly for Clinton in 2016. And it's interesting why. I mean, the fact that it's traditionally a Republican stronghold has to do, of course, with its suburbanness and its whiteness, but also definitely it has a very, there's a very strong military background. There's a lot of military bases in San Diego and Orange County, and even southern LA County, there's a much stronger military contingent, which definitely would kind of lead to support for especially a Republican like Bush. And that still exists, and there's still a greater degree of patriotism that you see south of LAX through San Diego County based on, I think, that military heritage. But as we know on this podcast, of course, military, a certain degree of military-industrial complex identity doesn't necessarily equate to support for Trump. And in fact, Hillary Clinton was a favorite candidate of that lot. So it's really not surprising that even San Diego and Orange counties would have gone for Clinton in 2016.
Well, yeah, those places, they've changed a lot demographically. And you can kind of observe that if you've gone there in the past. The demographics have changed a lot. And also the white population there has probably gotten a lot more swipple as well.
Like more transplants, a combination. I'd have to see the stats to know what, whether it's more, demographic change outright in terms of there being more and more immigrants moving in, or if it's also the white population changing to be more kind of swipple liberal. I kind of think probably both things are happening.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego probably still is like the whitest major city in California, which is, I mean, that's kind of interesting considering it's right on the border.
Yeah.
But it definitely is compared to LA. But basically everywhere is changing demographically.
Yeah, no, certainly. And you said that you could kind of witness that based on now versus the last time you were there. Just a lot less families and young people, you said, and generally, you know, less white people. It's just kind of a less thriving population.
Well, yeah, but that's basically the case everywhere in California.
I suppose it is.
One trend that's really happened is I've noticed is like the suburbs have really changed like the most demographically. Traditionally, it was like in urban areas, and suburbs are. If you go to a lot of suburbs in California, it's mostly like more people of color, and then a lot of like older white people.
Yeah, definitely see that in the Bay Area, and increasingly in San Diego County and Orange County.
And where you are in the Valley, I mean, I don't know, that sort of counts. That's more the kind of like more older inner ring suburb. But
yeah,
you do notice
suburb.
That in that trend in a lot of the newer suburbs as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it just, not a lot of white families, basically. I mean, and this has to do with a lot of things, but certainly it's just, the tide in California just doesn't really lend itself to that. There's not a kind of optimism in the air about population growth. The white people that you have tend to be somewhat of an antinatal sort of
The thing
situation.
Is, you even see there's even like a demographic decline. It's not just like the middle class or working class. You see it among the upper class as well.
Yeah, well, in California, you have this combination of, you know, some younger white people who'd probably like to have families, but, you know, housing is a bit of a nightmare here. Extremely expensive. Cost of living in general, extraordinarily expensive. Hard to find kind of satisfying work. I mean, these are problems everywhere, but they're problems here too. And so that kind of retards the ability of young people to have families. And then you also have a strong sort of, I mean, again, these are trends everywhere, but they're quite pronounced here. You have a kind of implicitly antinatalist trend of thought among a lot of young white liberals, and it has to do with ecology, and obviously we're very...
Oh, that's a huge thing now, where a lot of people are saying they won't have kids because of climate change.
Absolutely, and especially in a place like California. Now, don't get me wrong, and I think you'll agree with this, you know, both of us are believers in climate change and believers that it's a problem, but the kind of nihilism that goes along with it in a lot of the liberal culture surrounding us is dismaying and has these kinds of these kinds of effects. I mean, even before I moved to California, a lot of college friends. It's not even like a really well thought out position. It's just like this kind of shrug, like, oh yeah, like I don't want to have kids anyway because the environment, man. Like, it's that sort of thing. It's very much, it's kind of, I don't think it's super well thought out, but I think that it is just another reason not to do something in this case, another reason not to have kids. Because, I mean, in order to promote birth rights, it's not an obvious thing. Like, it's always requires a great deal of sacrifice to start a family. And even in the best of times, it requires a lot of sacrifice. And if there's all these trends in the culture that are saying, like, it's not even good anyway, of course you're going to see plummeting birth rates. That's a somewhat of a tangent. I don't know how much of that's at play in San Diego. It sounds a bit more like the type of thing you'd expect to hear from young people up in San Francisco. But it's absolutely a trend. And
San Diego, another thing is, like, you made some comparisons to different cities like Miami. It's probably this one city in California that is the most stereotypically, like, all-American.
Yeah, yeah, and that has a bit to do, I'm sure, with the military background. I've seen people in San Diego with, like, MAGA hats on, and they don't get attacked. It might be one of the only places in California where you can do that. But even if not MAGA hats, even if not Trump stuff, even just you see more kind of American flags and stuff like that. I was just telling my girlfriend, even like, I feel like that kind of starts, not even just in San Diego, but south of LAX. I was recently driving past Manhattan Beach and I saw a Trump flag. It's, I think, because of the military, the military elements, things get increasingly all American, from around LAX down to San Diego, where it kind of peaks through Orange County, until it hits a literal hard wall at the border, which is another topic we're going to cover today.
Well, that's the thing about California is, California is so remarkably different than the rest of the nation, except for like a few small pockets that might be more stereotypically American. So I do see Calexit as like a viable trend. Or even if it doesn't happen and it goes, yeah. If it doesn't go into fruition, it's still like a relevant cultural phenomenon.
Absolutely. And if I could go on another tangent, I go back and forth on Calexit. Right now I'm very against it because I think that I'm Yang Gang right now for the time being. And I think that in there, I was telling you this about this on the trip. I think within Yang Gang and people like Elon Musk supporting Yang, there's this real opportunity for the kind of elites of California to do something to help the entire country by instituting something like universal basic income. That's what I want to happen as a Californian and as an American. I want that unification to be reachieved rather than the kind of balkanization that I do believe will come in lieu of that. So I'm pro unification for the time, and that's kind of a recent thing for me, because I think that California should, it's one of the best economies in the U.S. and there's so many things I don't like about it, but I think that that Californians and the elites here could do something positive for the country, and I currently am in a state of mind where I want to give them a bit of a doubt that maybe they will. So that's my Calexit rant. But, and it's sometimes hard, what you're describing, how California feels so different from the rest of the country, very much so, in LA, especially in places like West Hollywood, even the Valley to some extent, and definitely in the Bay Area. But there are still these places like San Diego that retain this all-Americanness, but also, of course, there's still California. And in those places, you could kind of imagine what a greater unity between California and the rest of the country could look like.
Yeah, because if Calexit were to happen, a lot of these trends would accelerate, like it would go in a much more radically different direction, being radically different than the rest of the nation.
Yeah, I'm not anti-California. There's so many things, if I was, I wouldn't live here. There's so many things I love about this state, and I even think that all of the sort of Silicon Valley elites and whatnot, they're all redeemable so long as they can do something to kind of help the mess they've made, not consciously, but the mess they've made.
You seem to be hopefully optimistic about their motivations.
I can't really speak to their motivations. It's more like, this is what I have to do in order to live a life that's not, you know, completely cognitive dissonance. It's almost just I have to, even if I don't necessarily think it will happen, even if I don't have a very high opinion of their motivation. I mean, I think someone like Elon Musk, I like to think that maybe there's a part of him that's better, you know. And I think that, so another great example would be Peter Thiel, who is a Trump supporter and a nationalist, but also a technocrat. I think that there is this trend, and you know.
So you say maybe like probably maybe not so much like Zuckerberg or the CEO of Google, but you're saying someone like Musk or Thiel.
Someone like Musk or Thiel, but even someone like Zuckerberg, or I don't know, I don't really know anything about the CEO of Google other than that she's a woman. But Zuckerberg, for example, I have no love for Zuckerberg. However, he has spoken out in favor of universal basic income. So I say, why doesn't he, you know, especially now that Facebook stock seems to be lowering there, at least from my perspective. So why doesn't he, you know, get a little more politically involved and actually try and sort out some of the negative effects that the sort of technocratic revolution he helped ushered in have wrought on the country.
Yeah, I mean, this is going way off on a tangent, our intended topic subject matter. But what's interesting is there are a lot of like anti-Yang leftists who are opposed to Yang's UBI because a lot of the tech oligarchs like Zuckerberg support it.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I think that I've always said this about Yang. He is a capitalist and he is a technocrat. And I'm not necessarily enthusiastically either of those things. However, I think we either have to start thinking in terms of trying to work it out with these people. Because I would rather, you know, work a job and try and make shit work as is rather than devoting my self to, you know, potential revolution. But I don't think that capitalism or technocracy, these things aren't just going to come toppling down democratically. No, I don't believe that. And it's off topic, but look, we're talking San Diego, California, I think.
Well, with the kind of, with the urban layout of San Diego, in some ways it is like LA. But the thing is, it is more centralized. So downtown is basically the center. I'd say with LA, there's a pretty strong divide between downtown LA and the West Side, as like what is the main urban center, and it's not really well defined. I'd say San Diego is spread out, but downtown pretty much is the urban center.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's actually something that sometimes bugs me about LA. Just I don't even know what in terms of, but the fact that it's hard to kind of locate yourself there. It's kind of hard to really know. It's like you're downtown, but are you really downtown? Maybe Hollywood's really downtown, you know. There's that kind of disconnectedness about everything in LA. San Diego, while it does have some of that same sprawl and it's certain amount of disconnection, it's way more, to me, it feels, on the short number of times I've been there, to me, it feels way more sort of centrally revolving around downtown. It makes the whole experience of it more cohesive.
Outside of downtown and a few other places, most of the region is pretty suburban. And yeah, there's a lot of sprawl. So there's some people who have a visceral hatred of suburban sprawl. And then there's some people do consider it more aesthetically pleasing. Or some people think it's necessary to have like a middle-class family-friendly lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, suburbia is a whole other sort of ball of wax. I mean, I'm very sympathetic to the people who do live in suburbia, but you know, I'm more of an urbanist. I think that you know, building up vertically is better than sprawling. Certainly, ecologically speaking, that's true. And I think that suburbia is not necessarily great for culture writ large, and it's kind of the housing scheme of neoliberalism.
One thing I do remember when driving down to San Diego as like a kid or a teenager, like whenever I drive down the 5 in Orange County and San Diego, I would see new tract housing developments going up. And now pretty much like everything that's got built has already got built. So I haven't actually seen that much like new sprawl construction. It does seem like the future trend will be urban infill. And I looked around Google Maps or Google Earth just out of curiosity, and you see some newer subdivisions going up, but not as much as they have in the past. do you feel that the suburban sprawl, like, totally ruins the landscape? Or were you still able to appreciate, like, the natural landscapes driving around?
Yeah, I'm not a total... Again, I said a couple of bad things about suburbia a moment ago. I mean, I'm not a totally negative about it, and I wouldn't say it that it ruins anything. I'm not that strict in my view of it. I think it's fine as is. I just think that in the future, that building upward is the better choice.
The thing is, I didn't actually see that much newer sort of high density construction either. I saw I did see one new high rise going up in downtown San Diego, kind of near where the Petco Stadium is, mm-hmm. but and a few kind of mid rise construction going up. But I didn't see, like, a ton of new high-density construction.
Yeah, no, me neither. I don't know if how much San Diego's population is going up every year or where those people are moving. But, yeah.
So, yeah, we did go to downtown, and downtown's skyline, I like the skyline in some ways, but it's not that impressive because there's height restrictions due to the airport being nearby.
Yeah, it's somewhat squat compared to L.A. or certainly New York or Chicago, God forbid. Like, yeah, it's pretty short compared. But it's still a skyline. It still looks nice from the highway. And one thing that San Diego does a really good job of is lighting. They have all these sort of, I don't know what they are, LED lights
going
up the sides of the building and kind of variegated colors, sort of red, green, blue. That gives it sort of a... sort of aesthetic. So they do a good job of that, and I still think it looks pretty nice, and especially right on the water.
Yeah, that is what... Yeah, it does look... The contrast of the water, as I said before, how downtown LA is inland. I mean, if hypothetically downtown was built on the west side, like, LA would be a lot different as a city.
Yeah, what if downtown was built on the west side? Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I actually wonder... what the history there is, like, why wasn't there more of a downtown on the shore, or why is downtown LA where it is? I guess it just has to do with the mountains or something. But yeah, it'll be different, certainly.
And the historic section of downtown is called the Gaslamp Quarter, the Gaslamp District. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of, that's like the one section of San Diego, I'd say pretty much the only section of San Diego that feels very urban. There's a lot of like bars, restaurants. It gets very crowded on, like, weekend night, and
yeah,
it feels fairly dense. Like a lot of older buildings, they look like they were built maybe. A lot of them could have been built, like, in the late 19th century.
It's pretty nice, and that's the Gaslamp in particular is a part of San Diego that I would say. You feel like you kind of could be in San Francisco while you're there. You feel like you could be in Manhattan almost at certain points. It is pretty objectively, I would say, nicer than downtown LA. It's kind of like what downtown LA would be and what certain pockets of it kind of are, but just without all the homeless people, without all the kind of urban decay, it's much, much nicer. Yeah, lots of young people, lots of restaurants, clubs, things like that. Not my scene. But at the same time, it's undeniable that it's a happening place.
And I was reading somewhere, it was originally like a really bad, like a Skid Row type district, but it was revitalized due to the construction of Fordham Plaza. That was part of the reason it got revitalized in the 80s, but it originally was a really like run-down derelict area.
Which is fascinating because that makes Fordham Plaza an extreme success story. It was built... in 1985 with the intention of revitalizing downtown, and it's amazing. Now, as we'll talk about in a moment, Horton Plaza is condemned and going to be torn down almost entirely, save for one part. So that's sad. But it's funny to think that even though Horton Plaza is now considered, you know, done for, the effect it had, not the effect that it alone had, but something that it really helped with, which is the revitalization of downtown, of the Gaslamp, definitely remains to this day strongly. So I don't know if San Diegans necessarily even know that about Horton Plaza, but it seems worth tipping your hat to.
Well, the way it was designed, like, it's very inward facing. Like, there's large parking garages facing the streets, and there's like a narrow passageway, and it's closed off from it's closed off from the street life of the gas lamp quarter. And part of the reason was because back then it was a bad area, so they wanted to have some degree of separation. And that's the case with a lot of urbanist developments from the 70s and 80s that were built like to revitalize like high crime zones. They are kind of closed off. And some urbanists dislike that, but I don't necessarily, as long as, I don't know, like, I kind of like how there's a sense of mystery, and it's still, I would say, like, anything.
Yes, I agree.
It's a sense of mystery, and I would say anything that has, like, a space where for people to walk, and it's a communal, like, walkable space is a good thing, even it doesn't have to be, I don't really buy into it's kind of silly, this notion of urbanism, that everything has to be right on a street level.
Oh, I agree. If it's, and I think it makes total sense if you're in a worse area that you need to do things to kind of deflect the outside. Even an even more extreme example we've talked about on the show would be John Portman's work, like the Embarcadero and whatever that hotel in downtown LA is. What's it called?
The Bonaventure.
The Bonaventure. Yeah. I mean, these are very harsh, almost brutalist or brutalist inspired edifices that really shut out the outside world. And they were quite explicitly made that way because of high crime in the 70s and 80s. And what one of the effects that has is it makes going inside feel like its own little world, which is
a self-contained city.
Exactly. And Portman's work is even more strongly like that, but Jared A. is also often has that quality, even his casino work.
John Jared A. is the architect. Definitely postmodernism. He did the original West Side Pavilion, the Universal City Walk, a lot of casinos in Vegas, the Bellagio and the
Mall of America.
Right.
I mean, he's one of these people that no one knows who they are, but like everyone knows their work. I mean, it's hard to, there's other stuff that's not even occurring to me, but yeah, a lot of casinos, as you said, Horton Plaza, Mall of America, just a lot of the most famous sort of places for entertainment and leisure in the country.
So accordingly to Wikipedia, Horton Plaza was inspired by this Ray Bradbury essay called The Aesthetics of Lostness, extolling the virtues of getting lost safely in this series of, inspired by the streets of major cities. And that's kind of a theme in a lot of these, like postmodernist projects,
You use
aspects of it in John C. Portman's work and the Universal City Walk, even the Rodeo Collection. You kind of walk for these like corridors, and you enter like a courtyard, and then you go up like some elevator, and then you're in another corridor. Well, yeah, it does. Like, I don't know like what the practical benefits are, like as far as attracting customers, if it gets whether it's good for business or not, but it does create a much more interesting dynamic space. And you don't see that same with a lot of newer developments. There's the layout is much more. Yeah, you just don't see those.
It's not as elaborate. The whole idea of getting lost in a positive sense, or whatever the Ray Bradbury essay is about, that whole idea has kind of been discarded, I guess. And now things are, there's a kind of return to, I guess, I don't know, functionality. What would you say?
Yeah. So either there's urbanism of just of a street with shops on the side, or there's the newer shopping malls, like we went to the New Century City, where the layout is more kind of like functional, with these big like a one kind of big boxy building, and then like a very wide straight corridor, as opposed to something kind of narrow that winds around a lot. And if you kind of, the thing about like postmodernism is postmodernism borrows from a lot of this aesthetics of the past, mm-hmm. and as opposed to modernism. So definitely with the Horton Plaza, Jared A. was inspired by the kind of Italian Renaissance aesthetic. And you see those same attributes in a lot of kind of like medieval architecture and ancient architecture in places you might go in Europe. And that's kind of what the postmodernist developments were emulating.
Yeah, I always said about Horton Plaza, it makes me feel like I'm walking into a sort of, like, I don't know, Italian futurist painting. Maybe I'm getting my genres mixed here, but I just feel, suffice it to say that I feel like I'm walking into a painting when I walk into Horton Plaza.
Yeah, lots of like bright pastel colors.
Bright pastel colors, kind of bold, large shapes. If you take literally the photographs that I have of there, you know, if you looked at it from a distance, you might wonder if it was a kind of semi-abstract or cubist, you know, painting or something.
And now with this new revitalization, the demolition, it's going to be this this tech campus with some commercial retail elements. And the new development is very bland. It's just kind of, I don't know what word I'd use to describe it. I could say, like, I could say a bland corporate aesthetic, but that's very cliche. And the thing is, people said, like, 80s postmodernism was very corporate as well, so I won't go with that, I'll just say that all these new, it's kind of an aesthetic that you see in both a lot of new shopping malls, as well as a lot of new tech campuses that basically, they basically all look the same.
These places aren't unpleasant places to be. I mean, I've been to locations like that. I can't necessarily think of one off the top of my head.
It's not ugly or hideous. It's just bland and boring.
It's just a version of something like Horton Plaza, which is like consciously made more more functional and thereby just way less interesting and more modern.
And the thing is, if the mall is not viable as a mall, they could transform it to offices but still preserve the aesthetic. That would be totally viable to do.
Yeah, it would be. It certainly would be. I mean, I think the sad part of this, though, is that it's not just a decision coming from on high. I mean, I don't necessarily think the people who live in San Diego really care about Horton Plaza. When I was there for the first time, I was taking pictures, and some guy was like, yeah, take pictures while you can. It's going to get torn down soon. And then he was like, you know, thank God, like I've had to look at it for 30 years and I hate it. So unfortunately that is the, that's kind of the public's perception as far as I can tell. I think, maybe it's too highbrow for most people.
Well, there isn't really, but really there has been some, like I did see an op-ed in one of the major San Diego papers talking about whether it should be preserved. There's some interest, but there just isn't a strong interest in preserving, 80s postmodernism. And Westside Pavilion is also being torn down to be turned into a tech campus.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I mean, there is one part of Horton Plaza that's going to be preserved, right? Was that a recent decision?
Well, I'm just going by what I saw in the renderings of the new development. There's a very small part that's going to be preserved. The part that it's kind of like a tall cube-like structure that's like black and white with arches.
Yeah, for sure. Either link a photo to the episode when you post it. Yeah, it's I guess probably one of the highest points in Horton Plaza. Maybe it's a big kind of checkered box. It is definitely one of the nicest parts, and I'm glad that they are preserving it. But yeah.
And the convention center also has a 80s postmodernist aesthetic. And yeah, it does kind of look like a spaceship.
Yeah, it does. I love the convention center. Similar aesthetic in terms of it could also be inspired by that Ray Bradbury essay, perhaps. It's interesting what you hear about postmodernism because I've read, I'm trying to remember who the writer is, but there's this very highfalutin critical theory essay about the Bonaventure that I think I shared with you once, where it's the guy, I'm trying to remember his name, but basically describing that similar thing from the Ray Bradbury essay in terms of the aesthetics of lostness or whatever. But there's a kind of a negative and a positive way of looking at that, and I think a lot of people look at it in the negative. And talk about this lostness as somehow like this fundamental, you know, confusion of postmodern culture or something, and use it to reflect on that. But I think what Horton Plaza really reflects, and maybe the Convention Center as well, there's a much more positive side to that, those aesthetics of lostness. There's a certain euphoria to it that one can tap into. But, you know, same goes with a lot of these postmodern aesthetics in general. where it may be reflective of kind of a kind of dissipation, but at the same time, there's a certain ecstasy or euphoria to it, like in Vaporwave.
And we also went to La Jolla, which is a wealthy resort, like beachside community north of, I think it's part of San Diego, by the northern end of San Diego.
It's part of San Diego, north side. It's very, very wealthy, extraordinarily nice, really close to UCSD, University of California.
Yeah, UCSD's in La Jolla.
Yeah, and it's where Tucker Carlson spent his formative years. So there's a string of unrelated facts about it. But really nice. I was really taken by La Jolla, not for necessarily intellectually interesting reasons, which I can now say, but La Jolla Cove, the seals, beaches, some of the nicest places I've seen in California.
Yeah, very kind of like a lot of Mediterranean architecture. Just the overall kind of the layout.
Yeah, but kind of like Santa Barbara a bit, but more like the kind of as nice as Santa Barbara or Montecito, but like with a lot more people.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, well, San Diego. I mean, La Jolla is still part of a major metropolitan area, which Santa Barbara is not. So you have to take that into account.
Yeah, no, definitely. Nothing against Santa Barbara or something, but just that it has that kind of look to it. But it's like kind of what I wish places like Santa Monica were in LA. I guess there's plenty of people, but it's also really, really nice.
Well, it's interesting with the layout because Santa Barbara, you just have like the urban grid is it's just State Street, and everything's on State Street, and there's less stuff to the side. On the side streets, there's not that much, but La Jolla is much more like it feels more like the kind of a European village model, where the streets are kind of windy and there's different like urban layers, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
As opposed to just one street, the way Santa Barbara is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's hard to compare it in terms of that. I just mean in terms of the architectural style, I guess, in the beach section.
And it's kind of important to have, like, if you have these wealthy areas, to have places that the public can enjoy. Like you were telling me, that's one of the things you really dislike about Malibu.
Yes. I think that I can get behind a really wealthy and elite area so long as it makes itself friendly for people of all economic backgrounds to visit, and where you really feel like that there's a kind of just an area that belongs to everyone, that the public can enjoy. La Jolla does a good job of that. I also recently went to Manhattan Beach in LA for my first time and thought it did a good job of that. And I love Malibu as far as it's a natural area. I go there with some regularity, but I just think in terms of urban planning and the sense I get about the people that live there and their desire to have any outsiders there, I absolutely hate the place.
Oh yeah, there's like countless articles by Steve Saylor on like Malibu and NIMBYs, like
NIMBY, exactly. That's what it is. It's rich. Liberal NIMBYs who don't even have like a coherent view of the world, if they want to be both pro-immigration, radically pro-immigration, but also NIMBY. I don't really know where they expect people to go.
I guess, as you're saying, like Malibu, people go there for the natural beauty, like the hiking, the scenic drive, maybe the beaches. But as far as the community goes, it's just like these gated compounds. And there's like a small like shopping mall area, but there's really not that.
It's not really a place. Naturally, it's a beautiful place, but in as far as it's a town, it's a joke. It's laughable. I mean, I actually like that little mall area somewhat, but mostly it's just these places where very, very rich people can live, and they have their acres of land that are shut off, separated from the outside by walls, as a lot of sort of alt-white conservative types like to make fun of them for. And that's what the space is for rich people to have their land. And there's little regard for any kind of public utility or good, even though they're oh so progressive. At least Calabasas has Calabasas Commons.
So is that the issue? Is it more like what is the key issue? Is it that it's like more sparsely populated and low density, or do you think it's more the kind of mentality of wanting to keep? It's more just the mentality.
I mean, I think the two things go hand in hand. I think it's the mentality. Yeah, I think the two things are inseparable. I think when you have an area where it's people living on huge plots of land separated from each other with pretty much everything they need on their own land kind of thing, that creates the mentality. Normally in situations like that, what you have is a lot of Republicans, but Malibu, for whatever reason, is that for people who think they're progressive.
Yeah, because traditionally it's been like stereotypically that rich Republican areas are much more kind of bland McMansions, like gated compounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there is a community we didn't really get a chance to visit, but there's a community in San Diego called Rancho Santa Fe, and it's one of the most expensive communities in the entire country, probably even more than La Jolla. But it's basically, as you described, like just like these massive gated compounds. There's really nothing to visit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that is kind of like, I mean, that problem is really a product of this kind of American individualism. Because if you go to any of like the most exclusive parts of Europe, there's always going to be a lot of amenities for the public to enjoy.
Yeah, no, I've noticed that on my few trips to Europe. It is a very, very American thing. And yeah, there's just way more of a general sense of sort of the public good there and creating things, surrounding that, because it's these nowhere on earth, you know, is as individualistic as America, and there's much more of a sense of the collective, whereas in America it is all about individualism, and we, you know, we're supposed to hate you know, public goods and utilities and things like that, and the quality of places suffers accordingly.
I noticed, like, one thing I've noticed with like if you go to public pools, like there's either like really exclusive, there's like a private pools at a country club, or there's public pools that are kind of ghetto, but there's like absolutely nothing in between.
Yeah, no, pretty much. That's a good, yeah, the pool question is a good good way of exploring some of these dynamics. Yeah, we've talked about this too. Something about swimming. Something about pools and the shore and swimming. It always brings up interesting questions about, you know, the way we relate to each other. Socially, and you know who people are willing to swim near, kind of says a lot about their outlook. Yeah, I don't know. I could get all postmodern critical theory about it, and you know, talk about the way that that there's this sense of unity when everyone's in the same water.
Yeah,
it's a shared fluid sort of paranoia that might set in, and you know, we call it the gene pool, and blah blah blah, but. Maybe another time.
Yeah, well, we did go to the beach at what's called La Jolla Shores.
We did. I think we went three times. We were there for like 4 days and we went three times. Beautiful beach.
La Jolla is a place the public can enjoy, but it's still pretty much on the kind of model that you do have in America. Like, you do see that a lot of places. Like, the most exquisite architecture is like in a private mansion, rather than in something that's accessible to the public as it would in the most exclusive parts of Europe. So I do think that we do need to, ideally we would change the culture, and maybe, I mean, zoning comes into this, but I think a lot of it's just a cultural thing. I think it's really important for social cohesion to have places that the public can enjoy. And I think, I mean, part of it is that Europe is still somewhat more homogenous. A lot of it, I mean, it is... definitely hypocritical, because a lot of elites will talk about things like diversity, but a lot of it is, mm-hmm. I think in a more society that's more middle class and more homogenous, people will invest in these kind of in a communal infrastructure, in a society that where there's more income inequality and that's more diverse. Like, people will want to like have this idea that they want to keep out certain groups of people that they don't want in their community.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that kind of exclusivist mentality, while traditionally it's been blamed, you know, solely on the right, on right-wing people, there's a lot of, and increasingly a lot of left-wing people who don't really practice what they preach in terms of, diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, and then we also we went to Torrey Pines. That's a really scenic area. It's like a lot of kind of cliffs. They're kind of cliffs, like small mountains, sort of like canyons along the coast.
Yeah, Palisades, I guess you might call them, right?
Yeah, or a mesa. Yeah. There's like a mesa there. And that species of tree, the Torrey Pines, it's very one of the rarest trees in the world. It only grows there and on Santa Rosa Island, on the Channel Islands off the coast of Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And you do actually, you do feel like you're in a pretty remote, isolated location, considering like you're surrounded, by, if you look, if you kind of go up on a mountain, like as we did, we went up to Soledad Mountain, where they have that cross and memorial, like basically inland from there, you're just surrounded by massive sprawl. When you're in Torrey Pines, you do get a feeling that you are somewhere more remote.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite state parks I've been to in California. It cost $25 to get in, but it was worth every dollar. Yeah, just really beautiful, and it's pretty cool to think that those pines are so rare. And yeah, definitely a very peaceful place. Yeah,
they do look kind of similar to the kind of pine, to the kind of like cypress trees that you see in Carmel or along the Central Coast.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But yeah, it was as you said, just surprisingly, even though we were, you know, in a city on some technical level, I guess, that's in San Diego County, it might be in the city as well. But, you know, really just feel quite isolated and at peace.
And then we went to the Coronado Island briefly, Hotel Coronado. You go across this bridge from downtown towards the island, and that's a really beautiful hotel because it's so different. So, yeah, I mean, Hotel Valencia in La Jolla is beautiful, but some more kind of, like, Spanish aesthetic that you see in Santa Barbara, which is fantastic, but it's very typical of California. What's great about Coronado, I would describe that style as more Victorian, but it's so unique. It's so unique.
Yeah, completely unique. I don't think I think probably there technically is, but I can't think of any other hotel I've ever seen like it. Yeah, Victorian hotel. Like the Torrey Pines, just kind of a rare thing that is, you know, thriving in that one spot. It's not, you know, people still stay there. It's still really the crown jewel of Coronado Island.
We were saying in the beginning that San Diego is like a smaller, cleaner version of L.A., but there are certain experiences that are unique to San Diego. I would say, well, there's nothing like Torrey Pines in L.A. There's nothing really like La Jolla.
Nothing like La Jolla. Certainly, La Jolla Cove is one of the places I was saying that. Coronado's unique. Downtown's nicer. Yeah, no, all in all, I think I kind of went into this trip with just one San Diego trip under my belt, thinking that it was kind of just a nicer, chiller version of L.A., and I kind of came out of this trip feeling more like I'd had more of an adventure. A big part of that was the border, which I think we're going to talk about in a minute. But yeah.
Oh yeah, we did. We did go to the border of Tijuana. We did actually go to Mexico. Yeah, what's called international, like it's called the International Friendship Park.
Garden, yeah.
Friendship Garden. Yeah. And
which is ironic because, as Colin Liddell said, looking at your Facebook, it looks like San Quentin Prison.
It does look like a prison.
Yeah, I mean, you basically... I don't even want to say anything political about this. I just want to kind of describe what I saw. You know, you go there, and it's like this thick wire mesh. You can see about 2 millimeters through, or maybe a little more than 2 millimeters, but you get the picture. Just this thick wire mesh, and you can see Mexico on the other side. And it really does look like Mexico. I mean, it looks like, oh, it could be, you know, Southern California, of course, the same geographic area. There's a lot of Spanish speakers and Spanish signage already in Southern California, but you look through and you really see it. You see the Mexican people on the other side. It was pretty active on the other side, whereas on the U.S. side, it was just you and I and a couple other white tourists kind of peering in.
Yeah, well, the way the layout is on the border is on the U.S. side, you're kind of getting out of the outskirts of San Diego, so you have some suburban areas like Chula Vista and San Ysidro, and you have this area of like the Tijuana River and these wetland preserves. So there's a section of where it's more open, and then it's kind of open space, and you have the wall there. And there's like two big barriers there, and then you have like on the Tijuana side, it looks very, very extremely dense and compact. It's not really high rises, but maybe low rise and mid rise buildings that are just really crammed up against each other. It's like very dense and compact.
Yeah, there's like a soccer stadium right on the other side. Basically, the city of Tijuana runs right up to the wall, whereas San Diego actually peters out well before.
It is. I've actually heard that Tijuana is considered one of the most dangerous cities in the world.
You know, I have to look into this more, because I was under the impression it was, you know, not perfectly safe, but I was definitely under the impression that it was one of the safest cities in Mexico. So we'll have to look into that, but yeah.
I'm sure it is like an immense, extreme contrast with San Diego.
I don't know. I'd have to go, and I do plan on going at some point. Obviously, it's going to be more Spanish, more Mexican, because it's Mexico. But I don't know. I've known people who've gone, and they've said it. You know, I've known people who've gone on a day trip and kind of downplayed.
Well, people do complain a lot about immigration, and there's a lot of legitimate points to be made. But if you just think about the geographic proximity, it actually does make absolute sense that there'd be a strong like Mexican culture in Southern California if you just think about how close things are.
Yeah, and historically, San Diego and Tijuana in particular have had very, very close economic ties. Look, I don't want to say anything political about this. I haven't been to Tijuana. Obviously, I'm sympathetic to immigration restrictionist points. But I would say, Tijuana, it's interesting. There's questions, if that's fair to say.
Did that experience, like, did it change your view on things like border security?
I don't know. It's I don't feel adequately, like, yeah, what I'll say about it is
because I see comments, on pictures, on the Facebook page for the Friendship Park, there's some woman... This woman who's Mexican was saying that it's really horrific that they put some ugly oppressive wall to destroy the beautiful beach, and you do feel just the vibe. It is kind of a police state vibe. You do almost like a prison like vibe. So it
very
is
very much like a prison, and it kind of.
But the thing is, it is sort of like that. Like there is an oppressive vibe to it, but I'm not necessarily I'm not saying that I'm opposed to it either. We do need really strong border security.
I agree. I'm not at the point... We had that experience of going. It was very interesting. It was surreal. And I'm not at the point where I've totally assimilated my perception of just kind of the weirdness of that with my views on it politically. I mean, it was just an experience, and I'm still kind of assimilating it, if that makes sense. That I haven't completely assimilated sort of how it was going to the border was very surreal. It was very funny to think that this is the wall that Trump supposedly has been talking about and other people on the right have been talking about, that we were actually in front of it.
Because on Breitbart, when they have a lot of articles about the border, they actually use that location where you have the border wall going out into the ocean.
That's exactly where we were. That's used as stock footage.
Yeah,
that was exactly where we were. And I'll say this: the experience of going to the literal wall, it just so didn't match up with the wall as symbol that's been talked about so much by people on both sides. It didn't really match up to this concept we have of the U.S.-Mexico border wall, and it was something much more it was surreal, and the experience of it didn't quite match up with the way that we often think about it.
So on the way back, we took the route through the Inland Empire through Temecula. That route was actually somewhat more scenic.
Yeah, I love Inland Empire. I love the mountains. It's a bit monotonous, but it's monotonous in a way that I really like.
Well, the thing is, my experience of Inland Empire before going to Vegas or going to Big Bear was the 10 going towards San Bernardino. That stretch is really, you're just
kind of fugly, yeah.
You're just going through it's just massive area of nothing but suburban sprawl. But Temecula, around Temecula and some of those areas, it is more, somewhat more rural. Though I'm sure, I do think that could get built up with sprawl in the future, the way things are going, but also the mountains on the side.
I don't even mind if some of that gets built up. That was one of the things I was saying. I don't mind if there's some track housing there, because at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's chaparral, like almost desert. And I like the view of the mountain. So I think you definitely could put a lot of housing there. And I stand by building vertically is better. But at the same time, if they're going to put more track housing up, I think that Inland Empire will become a much more kind of interesting and populated place over the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it is the fastest growing region. Fastest growing region in California. And back to San Diego, I do think the future of San Diego probably will become like more urbanized. So, I mean, you do have somewhere like University City, inland from La Jolla. It's kind of like a mini Century City. So unless like NIMBYs stand in the way, that like something like that, you could see that could become like lots of new high rises going up there, and just overall like the San Diego will become like more, you will see more urbanism.
Yeah, that's certainly what I'd hope for, is just that kind of development.
The soundtrack of the trip, it was your Erasure CD, and like the soundtrack of the trip was like the song Angel Made in Heaven.
Yes, Angel Made in Heaven, or I think it might be called Heavenly Action, whatever it's called. I think we played it over 100 times.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, we played it driving near the border. We played it on the way back for Temecula. We played it near La Jolla.
Well, look, it's a beautiful song from a band that has a lot of beautiful songs, and we listen to a lot of them on that CD. I think the message is probably that friendship and love and positivity conquer everything. And I think that's probably the thought that we should end on.
Okay, so it's been an excellent show, and thank you, Matt Pigas, for being on.
Sure thing. Nice talking to you.